Welcome to Sport Faith Life, the podcast that meets at the intersection of sport and faith. My name is Brian Bolt, along with my co-host, Chad Carlson. We are very excited to introduce you to our guest today. His name is Dave Jones. Dave has lived a very interesting life. He spent time in the military. He has been a professional hockey player. We got to know him because of a book that just recently came out. And yet there is so much more. Dave also runs a sports performance agency for NHL players. And he's also running an advertising, a Christian advertising agency, among many other things. As always, we invite you to like and subscribe and follow us on social media. And you can listen to this podcast or you can watch this podcast on YouTube if that's how you prefer. Let's get into our conversation with Dave Jones. Let's get started.
We're so excited to have Dave Jones with us today. Dave, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
I grew up in Northwest Pennsylvania. My oldest brother sought attention by getting in trouble. And so he thought it was fun to, like, I don't know, just do stuff that would get him arrested. So I didn't really, you know, think that that was a good path, you know. So I, at a very young age, started playing hockey, 5, 6 years old. And the way I sought attention was to score goals. And so the more goals I scored, the more attention I got. Won a couple of state hockey championships in Pennsylvania in 1989, 92. I said, you know what, the heck with college. I'm going to go on to play pro hockey. So I went and played in Ottawa, and then I played for Cleveland. I got a slap shot in the face, broke my nose in 3 different directions, deviated septum, cut the nerves to my teeth and my mouth in Kalamazoo K-Wing Stadium in 1993.
Sure.
And I prayed a prayer right there and said, Lord, this sucks. I need to do something else. And I don't know what came over me, but I didn't hear an audible voice. I joined the Air Force and I got away from it all. And so I went overseas and in Spangdahlem, Germany, and I landed there for October 1994. And I had been through some concussion protocol and, you know, a nose job. And so I kind of had some time from January when it happened to October. And I was in a really, really cool situation where I was like, hey, is there a hockey rink? And everybody, is there a hockey rink around the base at Spangdahlem Air Force Base? And everybody's like, no, no, no. And I just kept on asking. They said, you know, I think there's a rink over there in Bitburg. And so I went over and it just so happened that the professional team was trying out. And so I said, hey, can I try out? And they're like, who are you? You know? And so I tried out. I made the team. My commander, in order for me to sign a pro contract, my commander had to sign off on it. So he came over and he watched me play and he said, hey, you're pretty good. And so I signed a pro contract in the Zweite Liga. So while I was in the Air Force, I played pro hockey. only God could do that. And so I played there for 4 years and, you know, in Germany and had a great time with the Air Force and was a crew chief, F-16 crew chief. And so I got my degree at the same time. So my relationship with sport, now I'm 51 and I've, you know, fast forward through all that, you know, my kids have been through the hockey grind. I decided to chase psychology. I love the study of human behavior. And so why not study the human behavior within sport? So I'm a sport performance psychology coach for several hockey teams and hockey players, and alongside running my Emma's Good Christian advertising agency for the last 25 years.
That's a full set of experiences, Dave. And we only asked about sport, which is great. Sport connected to so many other things in your life, yeah, which is excellent. And I imagine another one of those threads that you'll have a lot to say about is faith. So tell us about faith in your life.
Yeah, so I actually did my qualitative doctoral dissertation on exploring faith amongst professional male hockey players. Professional male hockey players. And so it's from the NHL down. Faith has been everything for me, everything. You know, people say, can you separate them? I can't separate them, you know? I just can't. It's everything I do, everything, every decision I've come from. Now, I've obviously made a lot of mistakes along the way, but like, you know, asking the Lord for direction and hearing from the Holy Spirit and like getting, you know, some validation from different decisions has led me every way. And it started off in Kalamazoo K-Wing Stadium when I got a slap shot in the face. And so, yeah, it's been everything. You know, when I explored faith on a qualitative, like academic side of thing, what I discovered was, you know, there's two types of faith. There's faith in your skill development, right? Like I have the faith to complete this task, right? Which is different than a faith in God. And so two entirely different categories. So I think we sort of get those mixed up in our day to day. Like I have faith, you know, I have faith to, you know, to go to work. I have faith to drive this car, but do you have God-like faith? Right. And so, so faith has been everything.
You know, the eventual apostle Paul was blinded, and I would think that's a little lighter punishment than getting a hockey puck to the face. So he got off. Sounds like he got off easy. Sometimes God's got to get your attention, right?
And yeah, that's it.
Must have really needed your attention. That sounds pretty major.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit? So I think we've got a lot from your two answers, which is fantastic. Can you tell us something that maybe our listeners wouldn't expect? Something about yourself that might help them get to know you?
I think that, you know, the way I coach, you know, different executives and athletes is that I think faith, stress, anxiety, you know, this message usually resonates with a lot of people, is that it's not something we eliminate. It's something we manage. So if I have little faith now, I can have more faith later. If I have lots of anxiety now, right, I can have less later. And so the message is it's peaks and valleys. Everything is peaks and valleys. You know, the good thing about being on a peak is that things are awesome. Bad thing about a peak is you're going into a valley. You know, a good thing about a valley is that you're going on a peak. Bad thing about a valley is you're in a valley, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And I think we get caught up in this absolutes, like absolute thinking. You know, I'll just use sport for example. Like I had a player once that said, they called me and said, hey, like in the hockey world, they call me Super Dave. Hey, Super Dave, coach said he doesn't like my goalie pads. I think he hates me. You know, and it's like, well, before we go to that, just because the color of the goalie pads is, he doesn't mean he doesn't like you. Like, it's this absolute thinking. He said this, she said that, you know, that therefore we jump to these conclusions when it's really not about absolutes. It's about peaks and valleys and how we manage those valleys. So stress and anxiety resonates with everybody. We all have it. You know, you don't get rid of it. You're mindful of it. And you do better. So, you know, as we go through those peaks and valleys, it's about a good, better, best. And, you know, post-evaluation on, you know what, I was in this meeting and I was really stressful about it. I should have said something, or I shouldn't have said something, or I said something I don't think everybody liked, you know? Well, what was good about you speaking up? What could have been better? What could you have done to perform at your best? And so something that I think resonates is that we manage it. We're mindful of it before we just eliminate it or go a different direction.
You know, Dave, I can already tell. I mean, you've got a number of irons in the fire, one of them being kind of a marketing arm of what you do. And I can tell that communication is an important part of what you do and really landing your words with a variety of types of clientele, right? Different folks in different stages of life. And I can see that you're doing that. As you take your really foundationally strong wisdom that you've gotten through both education and a pretty eventful life and translate it for folks that are 18, 19, 20, that are living in the moment and maybe making quick decisions. One of your more recent methods of communication is for you to like pull together this book, which is kind of interesting. And it's, I would have expected, just from listening to you now, I might have expected more of a nonfiction, you know, hey, here's how to do life well. Here's a way to manage stress, right? And it would have been, you know, a handful of steps. But you wrote a story.
I did.
So I guess I'm intrigued by that first. Tell us a little bit about the book. Just give us an overview. And then tell us, you know, why did you end up writing a story to try to?
Yeah. So there's a little bit at play here, Brian. So I really appreciate the question. So Vision Wins is a book of about R7. And I just come from this could be right or wrong. I don't know. But when I say, hey, Brian, you need to do this, Brian, like this is not the way to go. I think that people put up a wall. Like, unasked for advice is criticism, right? And so, like, you need to do this. I did this, therefore you should be successful over here. I don't know if that's the best way to communicate. It may be. I just don't think it is, you know? And so I like stories. I like stories where it's so articulate and so detailed that you can put yourself in the story and come to your own conclusion. You know, that to me is more empowering and insightful, where vision can kind of pull through versus somebody telling me what to do. Maybe it's through my coaching, you know, through my experience with different coaches on do this, do that. There's no creative freedom here for you to kind of mindfully work around and how you want to get to there. We don't have time for that mess, you know, just do this. And if you don't do it, I'll find somebody else to do it. You know, maybe that's kind of my background, but I love story. John Gordon is one of my favorite authors. And so I had the opportunity to carry his bags in an FCA event, and I asked him how he wrote a story. And he kind of told me, it took me about 5 years to figure out kind of how I wanted to land the story. But so that's what I've done. So Vision Wins is a story of Kelly and Elliot who go through some success early on. They're Edina High School hockey sweethearts. And then Elliot gets in an accident, which is a true story of a guy who played hockey for 11 seconds at Boston University. It's an amazing story. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was years ago. He's since passed away, but he you know, his whole life he wanted to play college hockey, and he, you know, had a face off at center ice, and he went down to the corner and got hit, tripped, and broke his spine. And when he's laying out on the ice, you know, his dad comes out on the ice and he says, "We did it, Dad," after playing like 11 seconds. And I think there's just so much to learn in that, you know. I get choked up when I tell that story. But and so I just love story. And then On Thin Ice, which is I just released 2 weeks ago, is another story, but it's not about Ellie. It's about Kelly. And Kelly's working through her faith. And so I wrote it with Karen Ann Moore, who is the devotional queen of all time. She's written the 1 minute, 3 minute, 5 minute, 30 minute devotional. And she really helped me craft a story of what faith looks like. And which is kind of a spinoff of my dissertation, which I wanted something more traumatic to happen to Kelly, to kind of like overemphasize the point. But Karen Ann Moore, she really coached me up on that's not how faith works. Faith is like, you know, these little bitty kind of instances or circumstances, and, you know, the stress and anxiety just starts kind of, and then all of a sudden, you know, you kind of come to a conclusion. And so I think the story turned out really well. In fact, I wrote it like 12 months ago, and we didn't release it till like last month. So I had to go back and reread it. And I found myself going, this is a pretty good book. So there's two books there, Vision Wins and On Thin Ice.
And we're following the two protagonists then, right? So we're following Elliot and Kelly, these high school kids that grow up together, fall in love, both star hockey players. You mentioned pulling a little bit from a story, like a real life story of what happened with one particular college hockey player. That's part of Elliot's story here. And as I heard you telling a little bit about your story related to sport, it seems like there's if not sort of some natural topics, a little bit of maybe autobiographical stuff in terms of success in hockey. And maybe that's where it ends. But I guess I'm curious a little bit about the fact that this is a story that you're telling as opposed to giving advice or instructions. But what are these books about? Without giving away sort of the why someone would buy it, because there's really helpful hints. Like what is it about? What's the audience looking for here? What should they be looking for?
You know, this is a hot topic right now. And actually my wife and I talked about this last week. I've probably cried last week, probably 9 times over Charlie Kirk. And this week, probably 8 or 9 times too. And it's only Wednesday. And what gets me every time is that the idea that we were put on this planet to glorify the Lord with our talents and our abilities. And when you reach peak performance, that just comes out. And whether you're a Christian or not, it doesn't really matter. You are like, to me, it doesn't matter. Like, it's like the peak performance of being fulfilled versus doing a task. So like when we're tasked, you learn a task. When we get paid, you have a task, you get paid, you put in the hours, you get paid, right? But when you're feeling fulfilled, that's a whole nother realm of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual peak. You're on the peak on all those. And so like when that happens, man, everybody wants to watch that. It doesn't matter your religious affiliate. Like, it's so cool to see that. And so what gets me is that, you know, with the answer to your question, Chad, is that what I was trying to pull out is what gets in the way of peak performance. And so I was trying to pull that through story. So our doubt, our fear, our anxiety, our stress, you know.
Yeah, and you don't leave people hanging there either. You actually put people in tough circumstances. Like you said, you add to the trauma. There's death in this story. There's, paralyzing circumstances. I mean, there's difficulty in this story. And as people work through it, you give them some steps, some ways to think about things. And it kind of shows up in a variety of iterations as you kind of walk through. And I'm just wondering if you can summarize that a little bit and talk about, okay, I'm in this spot, I'm stuck, I'm short of peak for performance, but you don't leave them there. You sort of give them a path to move in a good direction. Give us some language to understand that.
Yeah, so the process that I use is called R7, right? So it's 7 steps. Destiny is number 1, right? Number 2 is vision. Number 3 is strategy. Number 4 is brand. Number 5 is communicate. We have to pray or think about steps 1 through 5, and then step 7, take action. A lot of times we are so action-oriented that we forget all the other stuff. Just go. Activity, activity, activity. You know, like, how busy are you? Man, I'm super busy. And there seems to be like a ratings on, 5 stars of how busy we are, you know? When that's not really kind of, I don't think how we're built to be busy. I think we're built to be fulfilled. And so everybody can be busy. I have a good friend just retired from the NHL. And we're like, hey, man, like, can you jump on this meeting? He's like, oh, man, I'm super busy. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, I got 2 tee times today.
Very busy.
I mean, it's busy, you know. And so R7, I don't know that it's the silver bullet of like all your answers, but at least it's a process to add clarity and direction, right? So what is the vision? You know, what is the strategy? It starts open up these questions of, okay, what is it? I don't really have one. Oh, should I have one? That's not a bad idea. How are we going to communicate this? That opens up the question of who are we talking to? You know, I love, Donald Miller and StoryBrand. You guys follow that or not? But like the organization's not the hero, right? The client, the donor, the first-time guest, they are the hero. The organization is their guide. So a lot of times we talk about us. Really, the viewer doesn't care about you so much as how are they seeing themselves in the story, right? And so how do they overcome whatever it is that they're dealing with. And so I believe that R7 at least opens up the questions of, we need to put some thought behind this. So that's sort of the path. And that's what Vision Wins is. It's that process where JJ is a mentor to Kelly and Elliot, and he happens to be a Zamboni driver who's burnt out on life. And so he's kind of throwing out this, you know, this methodology to him, which he, you know, Kelly and Elliot don't realize till 5 or 6 years later after he dies, you know, that he's, there was something there.
So there's the wisdom coming from JJ in the story. There's also sort of the, I mean, the actual epiphany, right? The revelation of what God did for Elliot and Kelly and all of us, right? Through the engagement at the FCA camp. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about in your own life and experience, how you see sports psychology, which can be done and oftentimes is done outside of the context of religion or faith and the Christian faith, how those inform each other in the way that you operate.
Gosh, this is probably the best question I've ever had. You know, can it operate? And yeah, obviously, if you don't have any faith, you know, it can operate, you know, outside of that, you know, faith. And like we talked about the two types of faith, like my faith to catch a ball or shoot a puck or whatever. I mean, that definitely can operate. I kind of look at sports. I kind of like pull back psychology and look at, okay, what is psychology? Psychology is the study of human behavior. Sports psychology is a study of human behavior inside sport, right? And so what I love about sports is it's the petri dish of all the emotions. Whatever you're dealing with at the core of your belief system, it's going to come out when pressure happens. So I usually don't watch sport for like the final score. I watch to see who goes what I call low EI, low emotional intelligence, who's all about themselves. Who's going to take that penalty because they're so emotionally whatever, you know, dysfunctional that they're just out of their mind where they don't even know there's a crowd watching or a team or a coach or responsibilities that are bigger than them. And so, you know, deep down, I talk to all my players, you know, usually on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I won't talk to them on the weekend because they're emotionally, you know, high. They're, you know, like they're just, they have a, there's something else going on there. And so I love to see the intersection of that happen because that's where the dialogue begins when you go low EI.
So it's, it, you have clients that you're working with now and you, you know, you, you seem to be operating or at least talking about now operating at the unit level, right? You're talking to individuals about their experience in sport. But you're also a person who's been part of larger organizations. You've been a part of the military. You've been a part of teams at professional levels. Mm-hmm. I wonder what, like, I'm just curious what you think of sport at this point as your faith has matured in terms of you've had your own kids. They've come through this sort of sports system. Tell us a little bit, like, as an expert, truly an expert, educated expert, but also a life expert in these areas. You just have something to offer in terms of the systems of sport. And I'm just curious what you think about where sport is right now or what sport is right now.
Another awesome question. I mean, I there's probably 12 ways I could answer this. This is really good. First off, I would say that, you know, it's a great way to make a living in a short period of time so you can retire. I mean, if you can go to the NHL, NFL, NBA, you know, that kind of thing, that's cool. I think for the most of us that are not at that level, you know, I think sport can be used as a coping device, a socially acceptable coping device. So what I mean by that is, you know, I think there's this something out there. We see this, it's the second time I've seen it where, you know, the guy goes to his wife with a nice letter and saying, "Hey honey, you know, like for the next 2 weeks, I'll do anything you want. But, you know, when football starts, like I'm out. You know, like just leave me alone. You know, I'm sorry, but I'll do anything you want. Give me all the honey-do list. But when, like, I just won't be available to you." You know, to me, it's funny and it's cool, but it's also a coping device to say, you know, what is it in your life that you want to watch vicariously through these other athletes that you're not doing? I mean, that's a hard question, right? Like, you're not doing it on your own. Like, I've always looked at sport as like, it's entertaining, but if I've got something with my family, my business, my kids, my clients, I'm going to take precedence over that. Or learning, I'm going to take that's going to take precedence over going to a hockey game to watch somebody else make money, somebody else be fulfilled, you know? And so I kind of look at it that way, right? Like how many people are using that as a coping device? I think also sport is a great platform for those players that are there to use. I say this a lot with hockey players, like, you know, being, you know, a man of faith, and like everybody's headed to the BHL, which is different than the NHL. The BHL is the beer hockey league. So no matter what level you're at, you're going to the BHL, you know, at some point in your career. So, you know, use that platform appropriately, you know, and, you know, because you are more than just a player. You're a father, you're a husband, you're a daughter, you're, you know, like whatever it is, you know, like there's a bigger life out there than just being a hockey player. Being a player is not who you are. It's what you do. Identity is a big problem right now. It's a huge problem.
That was a big topic at Global Congress of Sport and Christianity that was hosted at Baylor this past summer that we were part of, and talking about identity issues. And that comes through in Vision Wins also, right? So there's some really helpful language from some mentors of Elliot and Kelly's saying, God loves you today as a hockey player. God loves you, Elliot, you know, the next day when you're no longer able to, right? Because of the catastrophic injury. God loves you just the same. And so that appears to be really helpful. And one of the strongest messages that comes through in the story. I'm interested in knowing, with your experiences working with elite athletes and corporate executives as well, what are some of the themes that hit best with that group? What are you seeing when you're doing consultations, sort of at a broad macro level? What are some of the most prominent things that you're discussing with some of these leaders?
Yeah, I would say that I definitely live in a Christian bubble. So the players that I have are Christian. So I can't really speak to the other side of that. So I think that at the end of the day, players, active players, want to play at the upper ranges of their ability. Like they want to feel fulfilled in what they're doing in the present moment. And so there are areas where they can't see, they're blinded, where they're stuck. So I think that's the first and foremost of their priority. When I bring in identity and glorifying the Lord and the BHL and all that, like, I don't know if they can see it, you know, I really try to focus on vision for where they're currently at, but also write that in a way so that it transcends their hockey career. Does that make sense? So like, I wouldn't write a vision statement to be the best hockey player in the world, right? I would write a vision statement to say, you know, I want to reach, you know, my maximum potential every day, right? And that includes hockey, something like that.
Well, Dave, I think everyone that's listening to this is thinking very differently about the word fulfillment and thinking about vision and how that intersects with everything that they're doing in their current lives. And I guess... we're coming to the close of this, and if folks have heard this and are really interested in what you've talked about and interested in your books, how do they find you and how do they find your books?
Yeah, sorry, I think I lost my camera here.
Good luck.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, going to emisgood.com is the best place to go for that. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's so emisgood.com. Folks can find you there. I appreciate the work that you've put into bringing all of your different worlds together and forming it in a way that really thinking about how that lands and the communication style that you're bringing to really some topics that people talk about all the time, but maybe at a more surface level and don't really get to where you're bringing them. So we really appreciate you coming on Sport Faith Life, and we hope to talk to you again in the future when a few more books come out.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the time here, and I really enjoyed speaking to you guys, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.